Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
Hello, 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 Santa Barbara. It's your chantress of everything valuable and beautiful, Elizabeth Stewart. Yet again, we are celebrating a new gallery, fairly new. They've been making a big splash in our world here in Santa Barbara and Carpinteria and actually borders beyond, Rubenstein Chan Gallery. And they are up there in... by Palm Loft in Carpinteria, and they're co-founders of the Rubenstein Chan Contemporary Art in Carpinteria. This is a number two or three interview that I've had with both Bonnie and Irene and some of their great artists they've brought, you know, to our attention. And this is a particularly interesting artist that they're showing right now. And I love everything about her. I love the fact, even love the title of the show. And that's Jerry Shapiro. And Jerry and I don't know, we have common ancestry, I guess you could say, Midwestern and also Pittsburgh, I believe. Right, Bonnie? Yeah.
Yes.
And so you were painting in Pittsburgh probably when I was there. I was dancing. I was with the Pittsburgh Ballet Theater. You know, for a long, long time. And when I retired from the Corps de Ballet, then I actually started doing public relations for the ballet there. And so, yeah, so all the Pittsburgh art scene I loved. And so when were you in Pittsburgh? Tell me the years.
I was born, well, till from birth till about the late there were some times when I was doing a lot of traveling, but towards the end of the 90s.
Okay, then for sure we might have crossed paths. I love Pittsburgh. I think we lived in Aspinwall. Does that make sense?
I'm a Squirrel Hill girl.
Okay, Squirrel Hill, yes. Okay, so we, yes, yeah, so I brought my partner there a couple of years back and just to show him, look how cool Pittsburgh is.
Very.
Really cool. So now I understand from reading your bio. So there you are, and you are an artist in Pittsburgh, and then you kind of don't show much. What was your life like? What was happening?
Well, I moved out to Santa Barbara in the late 90s. I had some property issues for a while that had to be taken care of. And then I had some playing around with breast cancer for a while. And then right after that, I moved my two parents out to live with me so I could caregive for them. So that kind of, those responsibilities.
So you really never had much of a, what do you call it, young adulthood. You just ran right into total life, right? You just kind of were like, okay, what I'm getting from you is you went from taking care of one thing to taking care of another thing and taking care of your parents and this. So I guess what I'm driving at is now your time?
Yeah. The time you're in is always your time.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, you're in, that's your time. Yeah.
I love it. I love it. So first of all, let me just talk a little bit about the show. I don't know how you get the vibrancy that you do. And I want to talk to you about that because Bonnie shared with me a couple of images and then she instructed me how to take a look at more of your work. And let me see if I can try to describe it. There's a kind of a crazy quilt feel to it. And it's very two-dimensional, but it's very three-dimensional at the same time. Mm-hmm. And it plays with what we call the picture plane. So you're not sure where you are in the canvas and you're not sure where your eyes are exactly. And it kind of skins the eyeball a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that I really enjoy. And also, there's a strong streak of surrealism, and yet there's also a feeling of almost Chagall-like post-impressionism to it, with the use of colors and the use of mysticism and the metaphors that you use about weaving and flying. So sort of an Ariadne kind of feel to the weaving part, and then a sort of an Icarus feel to the flying part. So there's a lot of really deep archetypes, and yet you don't really expect to see them because it's very fanciful work. And you think, oh, this is, you know, this is work that I think is going to be fun. And then you think, wait a minute, it is fun, but it's also pretty deep.
Yes.
So, yeah. So lots of interesting things, and not only that, it looks great. It's got a great feel. Is it happy? Is it sad? It's kind of both. And like I say, the crazy quilt aspect to it has a lot of textile feel to it. It has a lot of, you know, tactile. You know, and I imagine when I come see the work, I'll probably want to, you know, get up and feel it.
You actually can feel, because she's got some three-dimensional work that you can move around and create your own images with, which is pretty interesting. And
that's Bonnie speaking, by the way. Go ahead. Yeah.
And the other thing we can do is we can walk around the gallery with this, with the computer, so you can see more of the work if you want to.
So. This is also interactive, as Bonnie is saying, and you know, I want to focus a little bit on what we call the progeny. So every artist has heroes, and I was trying to guess some heroes, you know, as I was putting together my thoughts on Jerry's work. And obviously we talked a little bit about the, you know, Dali and Chagall, and we talked a little bit about some of the almost the pattern making, the pattern making colorists, so the color field people, you know, the Helen Frank and Tuller and crew. So, you know, I'm thinking of people like that that could have influenced Jerry. And then I come to the Montecito Neighbors magazine, and there's a big article on Jerry, many pages long. And I read that and I find out, oh, I forgot one hero. And I want to just reflect on something that Jerry mentioned. The interviewer asked Jerry right at the end of the interview, do you have a motto, saying, or words that you live by? And Jerry's answer is, I quote, "What we spend, we had. What we keep, we lose. What we give, we have. The meaning of life is to find your gift. The purpose of life is to give that gift away." Okay. Who do you think said that? Well, it was Pablo Picasso. And so very interesting.
Part of it, Elizabeth, the first two sentences were something that my father gave me. It's from the Talmud.
Yes. The meaning of life is to find your gift. The purpose of life is to give that gift away, Picasso. And then the, you know, very interesting, very, very, I want to reflect on what that means to you a little further, Jerry.
Well, it's my biggest hero in my life was my dad.
Okay.
And I was taught from a small child that's how you run your life. You have a gift, whether it be kindness, whether it be art, whatever it be, keeping it to yourself, it fulfills you more to give it away, put it out there. And that's basically, I learned that from my dad.
So I want to mention that you're also a really well-known board member for the Friendship Center.
Correct.
And I really enjoy following them, because my dad died of Lewy body disease. And so I was caretaker for him And I understand your dad was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and that you began volunteering at the Friendship Center with Solomon, who is your dog. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you actually moved your parents, as you were saying, to Santa Barbara so that you could take care of them in 2009. And, you know, I want to ask you if you have introduced, well, for example, I tried to get my dad to help me, you know, create videos and make images when he was kind of going, you know, quite under the grips of the Lewy body dementia. And he took to it. And I'm wondering if you bring your art at all into your work there.
Oh, yeah. We do all art and coloring and painting is a very, very big part of the Friendship Center. It's a huge part. People that never, ever picked up a paintbrush or a marker all of a sudden, you know, enjoy doing that. So we have art projects going on all the time. Art and music are the two most important things that we do.
Yes.
Dancing.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, the music part, that was also super. My dad had a tin ear, couldn't keep a tune, but as he, you know, progressed in his disease, he started to understand how to sing. It was really interesting. Yeah, very interesting. Your dad, tell me about your dad. So you mentioned in this article, interesting. So you talk about the idea, the Yiddish word of person of integrity, a mensch. You talk about that, and I want to hear you talk about your dad a little bit, and what did he contribute to your journey as an artist?
Well, my father and his two brothers and my grandfather were in the music business. We were in the music business and started in 1938. So music has been part of my life ever since I can remember. And I was kind of like a little bit of an odd kid. And my parents, my mother actually, or both of them, I guess, did a little bit of research, and they happened upon San Miguel de Allende in Guanajuato, Mexico. So at age 16, she packed me up, made my brother come too, and I spent the summer in San Miguel. And I did that for two summers in a row. And because they wanted me to have that experience. And that's basically probably where a lot of the color in my work comes from.
Okay, so what were you doing in San Miguel at that young age?
I went to the Instituto de Allende. They have an art institute there. And I was the only kid. It was all adults and me. And we just kind of did a lot of artwork.
So you started there at 16.
Well, I was doing that when I was much younger as well. But when I was 16, I didn't want to go to summer camp. So that's where I got sent down there instead.
Fantastic. You know, one of the places that I loved, and I brought my partner back to, you know, we were touring Pittsburgh, is the Warhol Museum there, the Andy Warhol Museum. Fabulous museum. Did you have anything to do with the Warhol or
Carnegie? I had a painting in the Warhol, and that painting is going to be at the show. It's featured in the show here. And I was a member of the Association of Artists in Pittsburgh is the oldest association of artists in the United States. It started in 1910. So we did it. They did the annual show there, and they put one of my paintings in the museum, which was pretty exciting. And then at the opening of the museum, I wore one of my straitjackets. I have a collection of straitjackets.
I wanted to talk about that. It's on my list. Yes. Okay. Tell me more. Yes.
Well, they are very, very ornate straitjackets, and they are real straitjackets too. And I wore one of them to the opening of the Warhol Museum. And the other one was at a big show at the Carnegie Museum in Pittsburgh. And so I'm kind of like, that was kind of a big deal. Nobody had seen that before. So
No, I imagine, and you've actually, Bonnie was telling me there's straitjackets in the show.
Yes.
And I wondered what is that? I mean, Bonnie, tell me about that. So, you know, how do you show the straitjackets? I mean, go ahead.
Well, these straitjackets are on mannequins, and at the opening, they will be on humans. And so they'll be, you know, wandering through the crowd, not being able to use their hands. It'll be very interesting. They're extremely ornate. They're really beautiful. You would not know that they were straitjackets at the beginning. You know, it just looks like the arms are crossed, but they are actually crossed and tied in the back. And so the person who's wearing them cannot move their arms. So it's pretty interesting. And the reason she started working on straitjackets, I'll let her explain that to you.
Well, I started working on straitjackets because it's kind of an interesting concept. It's an interesting concept. And I was very good friends with there was a very famous, very, very famous rabbi who was also a psychiatrist. His name was Abe Twersky. He was one of the people he was a very, very famous guy. And I was a friend of his. And I don't even know how we got on the topic, but we started talking about straitjackets. And I said, wow, because I make wearable art. I also have some wearable art pieces that are going to be modeled throughout the show. And I thought, well, this is a kind of a combination of it's wearable and it's art, but it's not like you're not going to go out to dinner with it on because you can't eat your arms, you know, but it's a huge attention getter.
Okay, so you do a lot of textile work, but the straitjackets came to you from a discussion with a distinguished rabbi.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, distinguished psychiatrist rabbi. But these are actual, real straitjackets from the
major. Are they still used?
I believe that you're not allowed to use them anymore. I believe that you're only allowed to do chemical restraining.
Oh, great. Okay.
I don't know. I don't know.
Where do you find used straitjackets, Jerry?
New ones. These were new ones. These were brand new ones from the sanitarium. The sanitarium that is closed now is outside of Pittsburgh called Mayview.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay. All right. So, and what does this mean to you? I mean, I'm looking for the metaphor here.
It's the only metaphor. If you look at them, they're not sad. They're not a sad piece. It's almost like calm yourself, whatever's going on, you can kind of calm yourself down and work yourself through it. And you can get out of it. If you know, somebody can help you get out of it. And that's kind of.
Aha. Uh-huh. So there's the key. Somebody's got to help you out of it.
Right. Okay. No shame in that game. Having somebody help you get out of it.
Now you've got, is it two big dogs? Did I understand?
Yeah, okay. Two.
Is it Daniel and Henry?
Correct.
Okay. And they are 150 pounds each?
Correct.
Okay. And they're cane corsos. Is that right?
Cane
corsos. Okay. So let's see. Now you are tiny, I think. I'm looking at you. You probably don't weigh 150 pounds. How do you control these dogs?
They're trained. They're trained dogs. I can walk them with my baby finger holding the leash. They know better. They're trained.
What makes you, okay, so this is an interesting thing. So I've got a cousin who's, you know, I'm not very big. My cousin is the same kind of build. And so she has, her dog is 145 pounds, female, mm-hmm. and Mastiff, actually. So what makes a tiny woman purchase not just one, but two dogs that the combined weight is over 300 pounds?
Interesting question. Well, my first dog was a pit bull. I love that. It was a great dog. And then I moved on to... In fact, there's a dog in one of the paintings here, an Argentine Dogo. It's a very rare breed. It looks like a cross between a Great Dane and a Pit. And then I switched to the Cane Corso because I just love what they look like. And they're also not the kind of dog for first-time dog owners. They're just not. Because you have to get them in line. They got to know who's boss. But it's really, they look scary, but they're not scary. I mean, they're therapy dogs. They go to the friendship, Dan will go to the friendship center, you know. And so Solomon used to go. This, my younger one's a little more bouncy, but their father won best of breed at Westminster. So with these large dogs, it's very important that they're bred well, because if they're not, they can have some anatomical problems and some temperament problems, and you definitely don't want that. So
this is a big part of your life, are your dogs. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and the friendship center, and the art. And so is there a space, a headspace, a real space, a time that you devote to your easel? I mean, I always like to ask my artist, you know, Richard will know this question. So I've actually studied the idea of creativity. And so part of my doctoral work was following the creative person. And so I was trying to understand why connoisseurs become connoisseurs, why collectors collect, why artists create, et cetera, you know. And I was reading cross-culture books about art. You know, My Name is Asher Lev, From the Horse's Mouth. You know, think great novelists who write about great artists and great and getting inside the artist's head. And so I was interested to ask you, are you like a Hemingway where, you know, you put the rear end in the chair and say, I am going to create from 10 to 12? Or are you more like the Matisse that says, when the muse hits me, I will paint?
No, when I'm home, I'm working on something. It might be a piece of wearable art, something that I'm making for somebody they're going to wear to some big event, or I'm working on a painting, or I make jewelry boxes that are music boxes. I'm doing that, or I make puzzles, or there's always something going on, always. So there's always something. And I might work on something for a while and then give it a break and then go over and work on something else. But that's what I do.
So when you say you're working, are you creating with your hands? Are you thinking, or is it one of those two? You know, I'm looking to see, when do you do your work? And you're saying pretty much when I'm home, I'm working.
Yeah. During the daytime, I do a lot of dog training stuff. I'm at the Friendship Center. I'm also a long-term care. I'm an ombudsman for long-term care facilities. But when it's time to go home in the afternoon, from the afternoon till it's time to go to sleep, that's when I work on what I'm working on. But I'm always working on it. It's always, even when I'm out somewhere else, I'm thinking about, oh yeah, that one corner. Oh, I got an idea what I'm going to do over here. You know, it's the process, Elizabeth. That's what I like the most. It's the process of creating it. And I also wanted to tell you, one question you didn't ask me is, why did I decide to show now?
Well, that's, you know, I was kind of driving at that with the story of, you know, I see that you've come home to Montecito in a certain point of your life where you're actually, you know, devoted to your art, to your dogs, to the Friendship Center, to the things that really matter to you. And this is something that sort of is a very freeing moment. So then why you decided to show, and then was it something that happened in your life that egged you on to show? Did Bonnie approach you? Did Irene? What happened? Richard, okay. See, Richard's giving me a sign. We got to go to quick break. That's a good question to talk about when we get back from the break. And just to reintroduce everybody here before we go to our break. This artist came to my attention through Bonnie Rubenstein of Rubenstein Chan Gallery in Carpinteria. And she said, you know, I've got a really interesting artist that I really think you'd love to research more and get to know. And that's Jerry. And Jerry's Shapiro is here talking with us about her journey in as an artist. And she is, I won't say a new resident, but she came to our area in 1997, I believe it was. And so she's been a member of the Montecito community as a creator, as a dog trainer, as a designer of fabrics and clothing, and actually very, very active in the long-term care and memory care community all over the country, by the way. And that's Jerry Shapiro. When we get back from the break, we're going to ask Jerry, you know, why she decided in the career she's had, you know, obviously in this hour you've learned that she's shown in such prestigious places as the Warhol Museum, the Carnegie Museum, et cetera, why she decided to show now and what it was like to prepare for a show. And by the way, she's showing right now at Rubenstein Chan, and we'll talk a little bit about the gallery there before we have to leave. Right now, we got to go to a quick break, and when we get back from the break, we're going to find out a little bit more about Jerry. Don't turn that down. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart, and I had the great good fortune to get to know Jerry Shapiro, artist who's showing at the Rubenstein Chan Contemporary Art in Carpinteria. And just a little bit about the gallery, and it's in a really great area for artists and creative community in the Palm Lofts of Carpinteria. And you know, the pair are dynamic. Irene, of course, is originally from the East Coast. She began her career in New York. She worked in international licensing for Ralph Lauren and for Polo. She relocated here to pursue a master's degree in photography at Brooks. And she's actually a resident for quite a while in both Santa Barbara and Carpinteria. And Bonnie has a background in design as well, in clothing design and painting. And she actually had an idea while she was living on the East Coast. I remember this from when we were introducing each other. She decided, oh, I think I'd like to go move to Santa Barbara and open a gallery. Okay. And she did. Made it happen. And, you know, this is as far back as, well, 10 years now. It's going to be 10 years, right? So 2000. Yeah, so you've been a gallerist in your dream job for 10 years.
Yeah, in the fall, it'll be 10 years.
Yeah. Yep. And then this is Jerry Shapiro's show is their fourth show, and they have selected Jerry to be their first solo artist. I've attended a couple shows where there's been a pair of artists, for example. This is the first time that Jerry has decided to exhibit in 20 years. And that begs the question, our question, which was dangling over our heads when we went to break, why Jerry decided after 20 years to open back that door, and the kind of feelings that you feel now where you walk in and you're hung, your beautiful works are hung. How does that feel? How did you decide this, and how does it feel to see what Bonnie and Irene have done?
Well, before I even was even thinking about showing, I don't even know how it started, but I was creating a collection. I just started creating a collection. And the collection started from old paintings old paintings that I just, they were in my shed. And I just started, I didn't even remember I kept them. And I didn't like them. And I started working on them. And I just had an idea and just ran with the idea and the process. And I was just having a good old time doing it, hanging them up on my wall, you know, that kind of stuff. And then I was at an event, at a Jewish holiday, Sukkot. And there's a lady there. And the rabbi's wife said, oh, you have to meet Bonnie. And I went, I'll meet Bonnie. So she's telling me, and then I don't have people over at my studio. I don't do it. And she said, I'd love to see your work. So the short story is, I decided to show again because of Bonnie and Irene.
So that the Bonnie inspired you with the confidence to actually open the studio.
I liked them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And being in the art world a long time, it's really easy to get turned off because the business of art and the creating of art, they like at war with each other on certain things. But I just liked them. And so I thought, why not? And if it wouldn't have been Bonnie and Irene, I wouldn't be showing.
Okay. Okay. That there's our answer. So when you're pulling together a show, are you very confident in what you're doing? Are you nerves on edge? Did Bonnie and Irene coach you through the selection process? Did you have as many canvases to choose from as you wanted?
It was pretty easy, Elizabeth. It was just easy. I was working on a whole collection. Nothing was really done, but everything was kind of sort of done. And then I had some other pieces that were kind of sort of done. And then I realized that there's a cohesiveness to all these pieces. They've been on a journey, these pieces. They started out as stuff that, and I didn't even like them. I don't even know why I kept them. But I unearthed them and then I did them over. So each of these paintings took 20 years to do.
Okay. So there was a maturation point.
Yeah. They changed.
Where they were hanging around waiting to mature or age, as good wine ages, for example, good cheese ages. Yeah. They were waiting to mature. Now that is an interesting thing as far as somebody like me who studies the creative process. Is there something in any of the particular work that you can think of where you said, I didn't know that was there?
No, I knew I know every quarter inch of everything I've ever made.
But did you know what it meant?
It didn't mean anything. It was just, I was just doing it. It was at that point in time. And when I was done with them, I looked at them, I go, God, these are awful. And I put them in the sheds and they were literally in the sheds for 15 years at least. And then, my life has settled down a little bit more after, my father passed, and I'm cleaning out the sheds. And I was working on other things at the time. I was working on, I was doing a lot of making clothing, one of a kind pieces of clothing. And then I was going, wow, look at all these canvases. And I looked at them and I remembered where my life was when I was painting those paintings. And no wonder I hated them. I just didn't like, I wasn't happy. But I made them into something that all these paintings are happy. There's no sad paintings here. There's no sad art here. It's all kind of like, I made it. Like the name of the show, it's complicated. It's just complicated. Life gets complicated. People ask you questions and my answer is, it's complicated. And each thing is kind of complicated, but it has a happy ending.
So I'm just reflecting on something that happened just recently and it involves a storage locker. So I had a number of things. I moved to Santa Barbara about 20 years ago, and I had an old storage locker in another city. And when I left this other city, I stuffed things in storage, and I really never really wanted to see those things again, because those objects reminded me of a time that I was not either proud of or wanted to live through again. You know, it wasn't a great time in my life. And the things that were in there were from a house in which I wasn't very happy. And so I didn't want to ever see those things again. And I hired somebody this past week to go there and video what was in the storage and then take it to another location that I could sort through those things, which I will do in the near future, after, like, say, about over 20 years. And I'm not relishing that at all. And I asked my son if he would go to this storage and pick out a few things. Believe it or not, Jerry, as I was prepping for our interview, I was talking with my son, and I said, just go over to the storage. You don't have to pick anything from the storage, but try to find my second Dachshund's collar, because I want to, you know, he's long gone, the dog, but I want the smell. And so go, you know, dig through that stuff. All I want from that stuff from you is to save the collar for me. I don't want to see it now, but I'll see it, you know, when your babies are a little older and I can tell them the story. So he did. He went and searched that collar. And I was surprised at how the wounds that I thought were closed kind of seeped open. And as I was thinking about your show and the idea that it's been 20 years that you have not shown, I was in my mind thinking, I wonder, you know, Jerry had a similar experience where she just closed off a part of her and just said, no, I'm not going to look at that for a while. And now you have. But it doesn't sound like it.
No, because I was doing other art. I was just doing, it wasn't painting. I was doing, I was doing still a lot of art, but I was working directly with the consumer. I would be commissioned to do something, a drawing or whatever. I just wasn't showing. But for me, finding those paintings was kind of exciting, because I knew I was going to make something great out of those paintings. Wasn't sure how, but I knew I was going to make lemonade out of lemons.
You know, we also had to encourage Jerry to show. She was a little reluctant at first.
She didn't take much of it.
And she had other people encouraging her to show too. She's got a lot of support in the community, but you know, it took a while, but we got there.
So really, Jerry, there is something there, right? It's something that, I'm just thinking of one image that Bonnie sent me in particular. It's sort of like a very up close image of, well, I can show you, the black and white of it is here. And Bonnie sent me this in color. And this is a really interesting piece. I'm showing, dear listener, a piece that Bonnie sent me of Jerry's, where it's interlaced, almost like a textile, where you see the warp and the weft.
Correct.
And you see thorns and you see roses. And so I was thinking, there's a combination of imagery there. And I wanted to ask Jerry about that, the combination of imagery. There's also a lot of braiding. There's a lot of winding together, almost like you know, when a very intricate belt is woven of all the leather strips, that kind of thing. You know, so it's an idea of binding and togetherness at the same time. So I wonder if maybe this, what Jerry just said, I saw those paintings and I knew I could make lemonade out of lemons. In other words, a part of her life 20 years ago that wasn't all that savory. She knew she could turn it into something wonderful. And then, you know, the pieces that somehow have fitted back together, even though they have fallen apart.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
I mean, I also, after my daughter, my father passed, I took his clothing and I remade his clothing into stuff that I could wear. So, I mean,
it's okay, just, that is really fascinating.
It is.
Right now, we got to go a quick break. Don't turn that down. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart. Okay, so what did you make out of your dad's clothes? I don't know if I could do that.
Oh, yeah. You know what? What may help me do it? Because when my mom died, I thought my dad's going to freak out for me wanting to clean out my mom's clothing. And my dad, even with Alzheimer's, said, nope, we're getting rid of it today. That's just clothing. It's not her. So anyway, so I was okay with that kind of stuff. I took a lot of his sport jackets. And I changed the lapels on them. And I put a hood on a couple of them. And let's see, what else did I do? Oh, I took one of his dress pants and I took a bib off of some bib overalls and attached the bib from the overalls onto his dress pants so that it's got a combination of his dress pants and a blue jean bib and a bunch of stuff like that. It's nice too because it's my dad's.
Yeah, I mean, but that's interesting because I'm an appraiser, and so many people have this very sentimental attachment to their objects, and it sounds like you and your dad were like, oh, okay, fine, we can let that go.
Well, you make it into something that's you use it and you make it into something else.
What was it? I was reading something about this that you never really lose anything. But at the same time, boy, right now, Jerry, I've been going. So part of my job right now has been a little bit a depth psychologist as well, because I'm doing so much work in the Palisades with fire, fire bereft, very wealthy clients. They probably come to your show and buy. They've lost their collections, for example. So, and some of them, it's very interesting to me because the bond that's formed between the object and the collector is so fascinating to me. And because, after all, as you're looking at your paintings, I'm looking at your paintings and I'm saying, okay, they're paint and they're canvas. There's nothing more there than paint and canvas, but there is. And so the relationship that some of my collectors, I mean, really good collectors that are accomplished connoisseurs, that have galleries in their homes, that kind of level. And they are very attached to the idea of the art. I'm not saying they're not business people because they wouldn't be buying that kind of art if they weren't, but they have a very close attachment to the object. And it's interesting to hear you talk about okay, you and your dad said when your mom passed, let's just get rid of mom's clothes. That would be so hard for me to do with that. My mom passed away this past September. I'm still finding that hard to do, and because of that connection, you're a different kind of artist.
Yeah. I mean, I can wear it now. So it's if I wouldn't have done that, they would just be in mothballs somewhere. I don't have any children, so it's not like I'm going to be giving them to anybody. So now there's things I can wear.
Yeah, even if you had children, you wouldn't be giving them stuff. No, none of the kids today want anything anyway. Which is really interesting for me because that's another whole aspect where people say, they don't want grandmother's china. It's like, a big surprise. No, they don't. Big surprise. No, they do not. They don't want silver china. They don't want any of that. Yes. All right. So Bonnie, tell us a little bit where we can see the work, what the price structure is. Give us some nuts and bolts. When do people, if they want a private tour, may they have one? You know, are you going to do a meet and greet? Is Bonnie going to speak? Is Jerry going to speak? Is Irene going to speak? Are you having a platform? All of those. Tell some good stuff.
Okay, well, we are in the Palm Lofts, as you said at the beginning. And for those who don't know the area, we're right close to the beach down Palm Avenue, where like the complex is the last building before the railroad tracks. And there are several galleries in the complex. It was originally designed as an artist live workspace. Now there's about maybe 10 artists in here who are doing various things with their work and sometimes open their studios and sometimes don't. There are two galleries that are open regularly. There's ours and there's also called the Palm Loft Gallery, which is Arturo Tello's gallery, and it's been open for like 20 years. And he does a lot of different shows, but primarily landscape, because he's part of the landscape, the Oak Group.
Yeah, oh, the Oak Group, yep.
So we are open weekends, 12 to 5, on Saturdays and Sundays, and then open by appointment any time of the week. We say we're like a 7-Eleven.
Monday through Friday. No, yeah. Happy 7-Eleven.
Irene doesn't like that description.
Okay, say that again. I didn't catch that.
I say we're open anytime by appointment if somebody wants to make an appointment with us, because we live in the complex. So it's not we have to travel to get to here to, you know, to show the work. If somebody wants to come in and it's like they're half an hour away, great, we'll be around. And they could do that by making an appointment on the RubensteinChan.com website. Or by calling us, and I can't remember the number. it's an 805 number. Does anybody have it in their heads?
It's 805-576-6152.
805-576-6152 is the number to call to make an appointment. And what was the other question?
So are you going to have an artist talk at all?
We're talking about it. It would be toward the end of the show, toward the end of March. If we did it, it would be a weekend. And then I think it would be well attended. I think if Jerry's comfortable doing it, we'll be happy to do it. Our artist talks have been well attended, so no reason to think this would not be. And then you would want to know about the price range. Price range is, you know, not low. It's in the $4,000 to $20,000 range, depending on the item. We also have some three-dimensional work of hers, some puzzles that people can manipulate and create different images with, and those are at a much lower price range. So it's very fun. It's a fun exhibit. It's interactive, and it's beautiful.
So I want to just give a suggestion. I was intrigued when I was looking into Jerry's background, and I was intrigued by her showing of the straitjacket collection at the Carnegie Museum of Art. And I knew that museum so well, having lived in Pittsburgh. And at the opening of that particular exhibit, it was presented as performance art. And that concept of performance art is really causing a lot of head scratching. In fact, there's a show right now at LACMA, Los Angeles County Museum, where they're thinking about performance art, and they're referencing some of the art that was presented at Art Basel in Miami that was performance art. And they brought some of the performers, you know, to LACMA from Art Basel in Miami, just as a thought. And what is that? What is performance art? Well, what Jerry did was she had these 6 foot tall models that alternated putting each other in straight jackets. And this is sort of a S&M fantasy kind of thing going on, but all about the performance of binding and making free with the help of another. And then, you know, this is, I think we're ready for this. I mean, we always think, oh, the Central Coast, you know, the kind of art that we have here, this is more so, then of course that concept traveled to with Jerry's art to the Warhol. That's something you would expect, not necessarily expect that in Carpinteria. I think it would be fantastic. I think it would be just fit, especially since LACMA's doing something super interesting with the idea of performance art. Because Art Basel, if you look, I have a client that sends me there, so I buy at Art Basel for this client. And it was full of little tiny ramp stages of performers that were artists, you know, and all over, you know, Miami has these little kind of freeze art style little platforms all over the city while Art Basel's going on. It's full of things like this, not like this, not like straitjackets being paraded in stilettos and fishnets and beautiful models. But I think we're ready for it. I think it'd be great. Anyway, that's my two cents. What do you think, Jerry?
Yeah, I'm being a little more conservative and being a little more understanding of, I'm not in Pittsburgh, I'm here. So it's going to be a little, maybe we're not doing any fishnet stockings. We're going to be.
Oh, all right. Okay. So we won't wear fishnets, but we'll do something performance-y maybe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just the activity of putting it on somebody.
Yeah.
And then the activity of taking it off somebody. It takes some work. It's a lot of buckles and a lot of, you know, all that kind of stuff. So.
My goodness. Well, anyway, thank you. I want to thank you, Bonnie, for bringing this to me and how fun it was to actually get to know Jerry. And I'd love to speak with Jerry further. And by the way, she's often found on Coast Village Road with a pack of dogs, folks. So if you see a tiny little woman with glasses and wild hair, and she looks like an artist, and she's got a pack of dogs, you will stop her and say, Jerry, I want to see your show, and I want to get to know you better, and I want to, you know, talk to you about my dogs. She is perfectly capable of doing all three. So nice to meet you, Jerry, and thank you, Irene. Thank you, Bonnie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Jerry will be at the reception on March 14th from 5 to 8 with the straitjacket models and wearable art. So hopefully we'll see you there.
Okay, so let's say that again. On March the 14th is the opening. Jerry will be there, and she will be talking a little bit, you know, personally to you. And then we will also have a little sense of her clothing and her straight jackets and, you know, her textile art, as well as puzzles and all sorts of really interesting paintings. I mean, you don't have the advantage I have because you're listening on the radio, but I can see behind Irene all sorts of wonderful canvases, and I can't wait to see the show in person. Thank you, all three of you. Appreciate it. Appreciate you guys. Bye.